Welcome to Catholic Answers Live, the program where you participate with your questions about apologetics and evangelization, including the most important theological, spiritual, moral, and social issues facing the world today. Call now with your question for today's guest, toll-free 1-888-31-TRUTH. That's 888-318-7884. Now, from San Diego, Catholic Answers Live.
And thank you for being with us this Friday afternoon on Catholic Answers Live. So happy to have you here with us. Maybe just a tinge of adultish content to come because we're going to talk with our guest Don Johnson today about the sexual revolution. The sexual revolution was probably a disaster for just about everybody. Maybe everybody. I don't know. You can tell me, Don.
We'll try to find the people that it hasn't been a disaster
and
for.
So we're going to talk a little bit about why it's a disaster, and maybe you disagree with that and you would like to challenge us on the Catholic Church's take on the sexual revolution. But the basic question is, why can't the Catholic Church accommodate itself to the sexual revolution? And then as a consequence of that, how do we as Catholics teach our children? How do we as Catholics live our lives if it is in fact the case that these two things don't go together? They don't exist in the same moral universe, the values of the sexual revolution and the values of the Catholic faith. Don Johnson, our guest, is the maker of the movie Convinced. He is now you're going to have to tell me. I did it again.
What? So I'm still trying to get my mind around the notion that you and I are going to talk about adult things. It's probably the first time that's ever been put together.
They don't call us the knuckleheads for nothing, but we're going to try to be grown-ups.
We are going to be grown-ups today.
And you also are – you have your master's in theology from Steubenville University.
That's true.
Which that stamps you as officially Catholic.
It's true.
Steubenville University.
Well, not so. Like, I actually got that. You know, I got that degree before I became Catholic.
Oh, they got you, though. They got you.
That's true.
You weren't able to persist in your non-Catholicism. That's right. So you were in ministry as a Protestant minister since 1993.
That's true. Yeah. It's been a while.
And then, so just real quick, your conversion happened how and where?
Doing a lot of evangelism, apologetics, studying the Bible, teaching the Bible, debating with atheists, really had to dig into the history of the church, dig into scripture, dig into what Christianity ultimately was all about and what foundation it had. So, for instance, you know, skeptics would ask, yeah, that's great that you taught me that, Don, but the guy down the street says something different. So struggling with a lot of those kind of issues, like here's what scripture says and on what basis am I believing that and what historically has the church taught? I mean, it's a pretty common convert story.
Is it?
You start digging into history, it's hard to remain Protestant.
888-318-7884 is our number, 888-31-TRUTH, if you prefer the spelled version. Our topic is the sexual revolution today. The sexual revolution, our assertion will be, it has been a disaster. That's what Don and I both believe. Yeah. And we also believe it doesn't exist in the same moral universe. It cannot exist in the same moral universe. I mean, we can love one another and live in the same physical universe, but morally, it's a different thing. Then the Catholic faith is a different thing than the sexual revolution. Don, you made the movie Convinced, and part of why we're talking today is now you've taken enough interest in the consequences of the sexual revolution that you're going to make a movie about it.
Yeah, that's true. So making the movie Convinced talked to a lot of converts about why they became Catholic, and I was on my own journey at the time. And the sex part of it, as you may have guessed, came up quite a bit. Right, the Catholic sexual ethic is such a stark contrast to what the world teaches, the air we breathe. Like, even as a Protestant, I grew up, of course, contraception is fine. Yes, we shouldn't have sex before we get married, but listen, it happens. You know, people are going to do it. It's very relaxed. It's very, you know, free, a free-for-all, if you will.
Okay.
And the Catholic sexual teaching, particularly in regards to, you know, sex before marriage and contraception and all these things, was in such contrast that it was a huge stumbling block to many converts, myself included, somewhat. I mean, I had never even thought of the idea that contraception might be not the right thing, right?
Mm-hmm.
So exploring the Catholic teaching, how that stumbling block then actually became an attraction to so many of these converts really started to help me, you know, get me on that path to thinking about, well, what is it about the sexual revolution that changed? And what does the Catholic Church actually teach about these things? Because, you know, I'd interview people like Abby Johnson and Jennifer Fulweiler and Mark Rignaris, the sociologist in Texas. And the as they became Catholic, they said the sexual stuff actually became a key component to convincing me that, in fact, the church was right. Like, they're mm-hmm. the only holdout for this sort of thing. They're the only right. ones left saying, you know, contraception is not good. And then as I look at the facts, you know, so Mark Rignaris is studying the history of sexuality in America, or, you know, Jen is studying the history of the pro-choice movement, and Margaret Sanger and her fight, and realizing, wow, I've been on the wrong side of this thing. Like, this is really attractive teaching. This is the fullness of really human flourishing bound up in the Catholic Church. And so that interests me. I think it's a huge deal. On one hand, you see this sexual teaching being sort of this big wall in front of people. Like, well, of course I can't become Catholic because what, you're those crazy anti-contraception people. But on the other hand, I see it as if everybody actually knew the beauty of the Catholic teaching, there would be so many more people attracted to the church. So I'm sort of got an evangelist's take on it. I want to get that story out. Like, here's what happened when we went down this path. And guess what? Here's the goodness, the beauty on the other side that if we just showed you, I think would be very attractive to you.
So if you are still a believer, if you're a strong believer in the values of the sexual revolution, we'd love to hear from you. We'd love to discuss that with you. We promise to do that in a respectful way. 888-318-7884 is the number, 888-318-7884. Or if you would like some clarification on exactly what we Catholics do believe about human sexuality and why, as Catholics, it's not a negotiable thing for us. It's at the core of the Catholic faith to understand, to have a certain understanding of what a man is, what a woman is, what human sexuality is for, and how we are to live that out in a way that is fully human, and that Christ himself is the teacher of how to be a full human being.
Absolutely. You know, I was reading this story just this morning, Cy. The headline was The Rise of the Born-Again Virgins. And it was the story about some celebrities here, Sierra, and then in Australia, some celebrities in Australia and a few others who had lived this promiscuous lifestyle. They had been, you know, doing what pop stars do in our culture. And they have stopped that. They are now engaged, but they are engaged to people who to whom they are not having, they're not engaging in sexual relations. They have restarted their virginity, is how they're born again virgins. So we have taken this vow of celibacy until we get married. And what struck me about the story was these people were obviously more happy. You could just like the joy was exuding from the like, yeah. Oh, I can't believe it. My relationships are better. And I feel better about myself. And all of these things are better about my life now that I'm chaste. Yet, at the end of the story, it was interesting, they said, you know, not that I'm saying that not being chaste is a bad thing. Like, if you want to go out and have your promiscuous lifestyle and your hookup culture, I mean, that's great. I mean, that's, if that's good for you, that's good for you. Struck me, so like, would you say the same thing if you had stopped, you know, smoking? Right. Mm-hmm. Like, oh, I used to smoke 2 packs a day, but now I stopped. And man, I can breathe so much better. I mean, I feel better about myself. My appetite has returned. Now I can actually go for a little jog and not die. I mean, this has been fantastic. Not that anybody who keeps smoking, I mean, I'm not saying anything, you know.
No, but you're right. You when you find something so good, why would you be saying, oh, but if it's not for you, it's not for you?
And it's not good because, you know, I'm choosing to feel good about it. It's an objectively good thing.
Yes.
Right? Like we wouldn't look back on the smoking culture. I mean, I hope nobody does. You look back on the 50s when everybody's just smoking like crazy. And you look back and say, oh, well, you know, that was right for them at the time. No, we were ignorant. We were naive. It was unhealthy.
Right.
It was a good thing that we stopped doing that.
Right.
I'm convinced, Cy, that eventually, I mean, I hope I'm right, but eventually we'll look back on these days after the sexual revolution in similar ways. We'll be like, why were we were killing ourselves back then. You know, the divorce rate skyrocketed, children's depression skyrocketed, teen suicide skyrocketed, abortion skyrocketed, all after the sexual revolution. Huh. Do we see any correlation? Yeah, it was because of that. Like, that was the problem. And
but aren't there millions of people who tell a completely different story that, oh, it's so great that we've been liberated in this way? And there is a complete denial of the reality of the actual broken hearts and lives in our society.
I actually, this is interesting. I haven't heard any real life, maybe I'm trying to think of any real life stories I've heard like that.
Yeah.
Like, oh, the sexual revolution has been awesome for me personally.
Oh,
okay.
Right.
Well, 'cause what you generally see, you see it celebrated on screen. You see it celebrated in the stories that Hollywood tells us. But if you actually pull back the veil and look at the real life stories, the devastation that has been caused by the sexual revolution, I mean, no, it hasn't been good for anybody. And I think if people are honest about it, they would realize, oh, maybe some of these issues in my life are actually
right
caused by this.
Yeah, but I don't think people are honest about it. I think it's shrouded in an enormous kind of deception. And that this idea of glamorizing the sexual revolution as a positive thing is still with us. And I might add, and I'll get your take on this, then we'll take a break and come back and do some calls. But isn't it the case that the church itself, like you said, oh, well, many people see that as part kind of a, not a bug of the Catholic Church, but a feature. This is showing me how to be a human being. But it's also true that those people who, or those segments of society that want to advance the agendas of the sexual revolution really also see the Catholic Church as the last kind of holdout. And this, as a consequence, may mean some suffering for Catholics in the society going forward.
So I think I see what you're saying. Yes, that's correct. The Catholic Church has been. So doing my documentary that I'm making right now, I've got all this old footage of Margaret Sanger, you know, who the founder of Planned Parenthood. Her thing for 50 years was primarily the contraceptive battle. She wanted that pill made. And she does, I think it was 60 Minutes or whatever the equivalent was back then, the major news. And they asked her, I mean, who's your main opponent? Well, it was the Catholic Church back then. And that was the only game in town opposing her.
Right.
I think it remains. And so you're right. On one hand, that should be a major feature to a lot of people, like, oh, the church is the one holding the ground here. But you're right. It will also, and I think we do see it in our media, it will also put the target on Catholics back, if you will.
Right.
The church is back.
Just for an example, like parents, you often hear from parents, you know, the school is teaching a certain thing, or maybe the theater department is teaching a certain thing or whatever. And if I speak up, then my kid is kind of ostracized and I don't want my kid to not get a part in the play or whatever. You see what I'm saying? This becomes a kind of subtle, there's pressure everywhere you go. No, conform to what the sexual revolution has demanded of us about human sexuality.
Oh, absolutely. And it may be subtle, but it's intense. I mean, it's just very strong pressure to certainly remain silent about that stuff, if not to actually force us to partake. You can lose your job now for having at one time in your life supported Proposition 8 in California.
Yeah,
right?
People have lost their jobs.
We're to that level now. So, yeah, you're right.
888-318-7884 is the number, 888-318-7884. Our topic today, the sexual revolution. If you would like, perhaps you disagree with Don and I and you think this has been a wonderful, liberating success, we'd love to talk with you about that. Or maybe you have some questions about how to share the Catholic values of what a human being is and what human relationships are with your children, with your family, with your friends and neighbors, and you're at a loss to do that, we would love to take your call as well. 888-318-7884. This is Catholic Answers Live, and we'll be right back.
Hang on. Catholic Answers Live will return in a moment.
We hear it every year. The perennial question, what are you giving up for Lent? And there's nothing wrong with doing without certain things you may have an affinity for. But this year, why not turn the question around and ask, what are you taking on for Lent? Have you considered helping a friend or family member as they journey into the Catholic Church? It's called Friendship Evangelization. And so you don't have to go it alone, author Devin Rose has written Navigating the Tiber, How to Help Your Friends and Family Journey Toward the Catholic Faith. Not only does he equip you with the knowledge from Scripture, the early Church, and Christian history, he shows you how to deal with the common aspects of a convert's journey. Make this Lent one to remember. Order your copy of Navigating the Tiber today by calling 1-888-291-8000, visiting Catholic.com, or asking for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
Homeschool Connections, an online provider of courses for your Catholic homeschool, is a sponsor of Catholic Answers Live. Homeschool Connections' website is homeschoolconnections.com.
The Catholic Answers Minute. I'm Father Vincent Serpa. In Mark 12:28, when a scribe asked Jesus for the first of all commandments, he answered, "Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God is Lord alone. You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your mind, and with all your strength. The second is this, you shall love your neighbor as yourself." In this, Jesus was emphasizing the superiority of the inner spiritual and moral life over exterior observance. When the scribe understood and agreed with him in this, Jesus said to him, "You are not far from the kingdom of God." So with us, take liturgy for example. Many are the skirmishes over liturgical observance and abuse these days. No matter how legitimate one's concerns may be, one's behavior must always remain charitable. When charity leaves, nothing of value remains. I'm Father Vincent Serpa for Catholic Answers, Catholic.com.
Call now with your question, 888-318-7884. This is Catholic Answers Live.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. Don Johnson is our guest, the maker of the movie Convinced, and now a new movie coming out or in process of being developed. And that movie is called?
It's called Unprotected. At least that's the working title, but I think we're going to stick with it.
Unprotected. Like it. Yeah. Unconvinced, Unprotected. You're going to make all un-movies.
No. It wasn't Unconvinced. It was Convinced.
Oh, okay. Dang it.
No, it is. It's good. It's how contraception ignited the revolution destroyed the culture.
Right, and
or
so
at least did a lot of damage.
And the controlling kind of federal case was everybody knows the case for abortion was Roe versus Wade, but Griswold versus Connecticut, 1965, was the case on contraception.
Yeah, I mean, and we talk about the sexual revolution. I mean, you look at history books, and I think like good history books, whether they're Christian, non-Christian, whatever. The sexual revolution ranks up there with like the industrial revolution.
Yes,
exactly. It's this mega huge event that absolutely overturned a moral order, right? Like overturned the way we live in a drastic way. I think it's way undervalued, like historic. I guess we're still quite close to it.
That's the thing, right?
You know, and so maybe that's the issue. Like people, what's the 60s? They had a lot of fun back in the 60s and then.
No, but everything changed.
No, everything changed. And very quite quickly, we were talking before the show, and this is a little anecdote I stole from our mutual friend Patrick Coffin. I'm sure he probably stole it from somebody, but
I've heard of him.
You look at that.
I've heard of him.
Is he? I heard something. Anyway, yeah. He talks about how you look at the Best Picture Awards out of Hollywood in the 60s. In 65, 66, you had movies like The Sound of Music and Man for All Seasons, these blatantly Catholic pro-family type movies. But by 1969, it was Midnight Cowboy, about a gay drifter, right? A homosexual drifter. So what happened in between those two times?
Yeah, that's what we call the sexual revolution.
Revolutionary.
Summer of Love was 67.
68, yes.
Oh, 68?
Is it one of those two? Yeah.
I think it was 67.
All right, we'll give it to you. You were alive then.
I'll tell you, there's so many people with a nostalgic, the summer of love. They still cannot admit that was a horrible moment in the history of the world. There was a lot that was wonderful about, say, being the flowering of a kind of consciousness that a lot of those folks that were hippies, for example, became Christians after that because they took the next logical step. If you want peace, you go to the Prince of Peace. But the eruption of the sexual revolution into the culture and the radical change is an amazing disaster that happened. Nonetheless, maybe you think the Catholic Church needs to get with the times when it comes to sexuality, not be so old-fashioned. And I'll come back to the Church when it admits reality on human sexuality. Well, lots of folks have that view. We'd love to talk with you about it. 888-318-7884 is the number. 888-318-7884. Don, are you happy if we go to calls?
Let's go to calls.
Frank in Los Angeles, California, listening on Immaculate Heart Radio. You are on with Don Johnson.
Hi. My question is a little different, but it's along those lines, and that's what caused me to call in.
Okay.
I go to two churches. I go to a Catholic church, I go to a Christian church. And what I'm noticing at the Christian church is one of the pastors becoming more interested in a particular girl, a particular woman. Isn't that inappropriate? Because what I feel is that the pastor is using his pastoral knowledge to gain sexual contact or relationship with somebody like that, where we as parishioners should view them as that individuals that we can have confidence and trust them, that we can ask them questions, and that so you don't manipulate their answers to make it right.
Okay, let's let Don. You know what, Frank? Let's let Don take a stab at that.
Yeah. Well, let me clarify a couple things. Are you saying that pastors, in general, in the evangelical world, should not be dating, or is this particular pastor in a sexual relationship with someone in his congregation?
No, I see them developing a relationship, and I don't think not all pastors. I mean, a lot of pastors are married, but I just see that. I guess I think it's inappropriate because you trust them. You don't expect that. And somebody's vulnerable.
Yeah, I mean, that's almost just a position of power, right? It's always when you are in a leadership.
Are you trained in that, like when you're a minister?
Well, it's, I mean, to be an evangelical pastor, frankly, most of them, if you're a senior pastor of a church these days, are married. That's what most evangelical churches look for in a pastor. Maybe you do see this issue more among youth pastors, which is the person that a church will hire to take care of the high schoolers or the college age or whatever. And so, yeah, it can be definitely inappropriate, but it seems to me it's sort of the same principles apply because the evangelical world, the Protestant world, does not have the priestly celibacy. That's not a factor, and so there's not really a mechanism in place, really, within the evangelical world to deal with that other than don't abuse your position.
But even that, I mean, when young people take an interest in one another and romance and all that, like, that's not a bad thing.
It happens. Yeah.
That's all you'll say? It happens?
I'm not going anywhere beyond that.
You're not in favor? I mean, we want people to fall in love and get married and have children. Are we against all of that?
Well, this is interesting that Frank would sort of bring that into the context of this discussion, isn't it? Because, frankly, the Catholic Church and maybe Christianity in general is seen as anti-sex, anti-romance, anti-love. When in reality, we don't think the culture thinks too much about sex. We actually think you think too little of sex. We actually think you've reduced sex to something far less than what it actually is.
Right.
And love is far less than what you think it is. Like the way you as a culture are defining love, no, it's much more than that, right?
Yeah, it's not less. It's more.
It's not less. Right. It's much more. And so that's a great point, Si. Like we have a very much broader and bigger and happier view of love than the culture does.
Right.
We're not anti-relationship. That's
no.
For sure.
And then you think about the church of the immigrants coming here. The parish would be the place where men and women met. They would have a dance on Friday nights, you know, so that you could meet other Catholic people. And the whole point was to have wholesome and full relationships with another. Well, let's go to Andrew in Rochester, New York, listening on 92.9 FM. Andrew, you are on with Don Johnson.
Yes, thank you. So my question is, I am not Catholic. I do enjoy the programming, so I'm a regular listener of multiple programs within the station.
Oh, thank
you.
But
I wanted to present to you a question for discussion that I wonder if part of the sexual revolution is a response to, and this is the subjective part, I have viewed historically Catholicism to make the human form dirty or sinful by nature, if that makes sense. And I'm not saying it's correct. I'm just saying that's my subjective view and an interpretation I have heard by other friends who themselves are not Catholic. And I just wonder if part of the sexual revolution is you know, a response to that. I agree with both of you that there is an objective truth to the importance of chastity. But I wonder if part of that movement was kind of an affirmation of the beauty of the human form, and it's now obviously been perverted, but maybe the initial perspective had part of that in it. What do you think?
Well, I'll tell you what, Frank, because I knew the music was coming. So you got your question in, and it's a great, great question. I'm very happy you called, but we're going to give Don like a break now to think of a really good answer. So you should expect the very best answer when we come back. I would ask you this, Frank. Maybe you could think about this. I wonder if you can give a concrete example of the Catholic Church giving the impression that the body... I'm not challenging you. I just wonder if you can think of one. And we'll get we will get to an answer to your question when we come back with Don Johnson on Catholic Answers Live.
Catholic Answers Live.
Hi, this is Trent Horn, and I'm here to tell you about my new book, Hard Sayings, A Catholic Approach to Answering Bible Difficulties. Have you ever read something in the Bible that confused you? Or has a skeptic ever asked you to explain a scandalous passage and you didn't know what to say? Doesn't Genesis contradict science? Why does the Bible promote slavery? How could God order his people to kill women and children? It's happened to just about everyone. But now you have a place to turn for the answers. In Hard Sayings, I look at dozens of the most confounding passages in Scripture and offer clear, reasonable, and Catholic keys to unlocking their true meaning. After reading this book, you'll be equipped to answer the toughest questions skeptics ask about the Bible. So don't be left without an answer again. Order your copy of Hard Sayings today by calling 1-888-291-8000, by visiting the shop at Catholic.com, or by asking for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
It was 100 years ago that our Blessed Mother appeared to three children in Fatima, Portugal, and Catholic Answers Magazine is marking the anniversary with a very special issue. Want to be sure to get your copy? Subscribe right now to the best Catholic apologetics magazine anywhere by calling 888-291-8000 or by going to Catholic.com. Getting Fatima right, exploding the myths of Fatima, and a closer look at our Blessed Mother. Just a few of the articles to look forward to. You don't want to miss this very special issue highlighting this hallmark event in Catholic history. Don't wait another moment to subscribe. Call 888-291-8000 or go to the shop at Catholic.com right now to get subscriptions for yourself and those you love. Share the faith. Defend the faith. Catholic Answers Magazine from Catholic Answers, the most trusted name in Catholic apologetics.
Talking about the sexual revolution today on Catholic Answers Live with our very good friend Don Johnson, the maker of the movie Convinced and the maker of the upcoming movie. Well, you're not completed making it. You haven't completed making it, so I don't know if I can call you the maker or the
producer. You know, it's in pre-production.
Okay.
ReverseTheRevolution.com is where to go to find that.
Okay. Look at you. You always get the website in there. Even if I'm avoiding it.
It's
you
not
get
the first time I've had a microphone in front of me. So.
and the movie is...
It's
unprotected.
Unprotected. That's
unprotected.
Right.
And it's a look at the damage done by the sexual revolution. And I think you should support Don in that effort. And Andrew, I called you Frank on the way out, and I apologize. I got my callers confused. You still with us, Andrew?
I am. Can you hear me?
Yes. So the point you were making to Don was the Catholic Church had kind of had made the human body dirty. And that some of the liberation or the sense of liberation that the sexual revolution brought has to do with an affirmation of the human body. Is that correct?
Yeah, and I don't mean it to be such a hard point, but more of a curiosity for a discussion, you know, because I respect where you're coming from, and I'm just curious what your thoughts would be on, you know, that notion.
Yeah, it's a fantastic question, Andrew. Thank you. I would actually say it's exactly the opposite. Like, the Catholic view of the body is that it is part of who we are as a human. It's not all of who we are, but it is. We are our bodies in a sense. Not in the Gnostic version, where our bodies are bad and our spirit is good. None of that dualism or anything like that. But in the classic Christian tradition, our bodies are an essential part. That God made matter. He made spirit. He put it together in us in the image of God. And so we are exalted above everything else in creation, frankly, because of our special status, and the body is part of that. I would actually argue that the sexual revolution took more of a Gnostic view of the body, where the body isn't who we are. The body is a tool that we use. And so we look at our bodies as something that exists for our pleasure. I think if you ask anybody today, well, are you your body? No, you're not your body. Well, what we think, we talk about we don't talk about using our bodies, but that is what we're doing. Like, if you go, a hookup culture is about me using your body for my pleasure and you using my body for my pleasure. It's actually a degradation of the Christian notion, the Catholic view of the body. So in many ways, it's exactly the opposite. The only way you would see a body as dirty or something to be used up and thrown away is if you'd had more of a dualistic view of the body.
Andrew?
That's fascinating.
But if I may throw a challenge at you, Andrew, the reason I asked you if you had any examples is my mm-hmm. sense is that in the United States, we are formed by people who are literally called Puritans. I mean, that's the founding of the country, is the pilgrims and Puritans who come to the United States. And so there is within Christianity, or there are within Christianity, strains that are quite harsh about the body and about human sexuality because they have this puritanical strain in them. But my sense yeah. that goes along with that is that the Catholic Church is in general not one of those that's puritanical about the body.
Okay. Well, and I would jump in there, Si. I mean, the Puritans are very Protestant, right? Reformed-minded yeah. people. And Protestants traditionally do have a more dualistic view. The Reformation was sort of built on a more dualistic view of what it means to be human. We threw off the sort of medieval synthesis that we had, the classic Catholic tradition is that we are
yeah.
body and soul together. You can't separate them or you're not human. But the Protestant notion was more, well, okay, your body is less than. It's the main thing is the spirit, the intellect, the mind. Right. Like that's the right. good. I don't know if they'd say good and bad, but
yeah.
that's the main thing. And so what happens with your body is not the key thing. It's more spiritual. So Andrew, I mean, well, to your point, Si, the Puritanism, I don't think you can't make it Catholic. I mean, that's a good point. That's not a Catholic notion, actually.
But I do want to get your take, Andrew, because I'm actually enjoying the conversation with you. And your impressions of those points.
Yeah, and I think it probably harkens back to long ago, maybe the Inquisition. And, I'm probably dragging this from representations I've seen of Catholicism
yeah.
rather than actual Catholicism, to be fair. And stories told probably by Protestants about what it meant to be Catholic as I consider the notion of Puritanism and that, it's very interesting.
Well, and as long as you're being fair, I mean, in fairness, the Catholic Church is long, it's very old and very big. And I'm sure that, we're sinful and there's many instances where people have taught erroneous things about the body in the history of the Catholic Church. Whole movements.
Yeah, but again, I do think it's one of those. This is another one of those issues where the last defender of the sanctity of the human body,
yeah.
today is the Catholic Church. It's the Catholic Church that is out there defending people who are physically disabled, who are in the womb, who they see the person, no matter what shape your body is in. We're there as Catholics to defend and value you because that's part. You're made in the image of God, just like everybody else. And so I think historically you look at who actually values the body above all else, it is the Catholic Church. We were at One Life LA not long ago, and it's interesting how in our culture, I think if you notice, well, who's on the outside, who are the ones that are getting pushed to the edges? Oh, it's people with deformed bodies or not. That's
right. That's right.
Anyway, it's a great point, Andrew. Thank you.
Thanks a lot for being with us, Andrew.
Thank you for the discussion. I appreciate
that. Oh, and please call again sometime. It was a great discussion to have with you. Caleb now in Trumansburg, New York, listening on 88.7 AM. Caleb, you are on with Don Johnson.
Hi. I read a quote by John Paul II where he said that pornography is not wrong because it shows too much. It's wrong because it shows too little. And I thought that was a beautiful idea, that everything about the natural sexual act is beautiful, but when you don't show all the spiritual and emotional thing and commitment that should naturally go with it, it's bad. So what would you say to this idea that Puritanism and licentiousness are two sides of the same coin?
Caleb, that's a fantastic point. I'm a huge fan of John Paul II. The class I took on his at Franciscan on Theology of the Body by Dr. Ashey is probably the best class I ever took. And yes, John Paul II would say that when we – things like pornography, how are you viewing that person? You're not viewing her as the fullness of who she is. If you actually wanted to have a truly sexual pure relationship with that woman behind the screen. Well, she'd have to be with you. She'd have to be in a covenant relationship with you. There's so much more that goes with it. It's reduced. Not only is she not there, she's an image on the screen, but she's now an object. She's just a physical object for your entertainment, for your physical pleasure, for your, you know. So, again, it's another one of those reductionistic things where it's not that the Catholic Church is thinking you view sex too highly. No, it's you don't view sex highly enough. Like, you're reducing it to porn. You know, like, yeah. How can you be satisfied with porn
right.
when all of this other stuff is available to you, this wonderful, amazing plan that God has for us, and we're looking at a screen, you know, by ourselves in a dark room somewhere.
And that's supposed to be liberation.
And that's supposed to be, yeah, well, yeah, and you ask anybody who, and this is too many people, how liberated are you from watching porn these days? Is that a liberating movement?
Yeah.
Or is it an addicting one? Is it allowing you to do more with your life, or is it allowing you to do less with your life? So,
do you think, Caleb, I wonder that people avoid that, though, because it is a road of carrying a cross, really. I mean, pick up your cross and follow me. And married life and staying married involves a kind of death to self.
Yeah. Well, you know, I was thinking, like, in an indigenous culture, like most of us came from originally, where you had a culture close to nature, the mating ritual involved the entire community. Like, that's what weddings were for, and that's why you asked permission of the parents and all the kind of things, because you were bringing children into the world, and that affected the entire community. So people, the sexual act just doesn't involve the two people. It involves the potential children. It involves the parents of the people involved. Do they have enough food to feed the entire culture? So in a traditional society where you had weddings and everything, it was to make sure everybody was on the same page that this was good for the society, this particular relationship. And those people have the right to marry, but let's make it as smooth as we can for them, you know, so they're aware of all the ramifications of getting married and raising children. And so the society can deal with that, you know. And I think that's a beautiful thing. It's something we really all want deep down, you know. But you can't take shortcuts.
Well, it's a great point, Caleb, about marriage. You know, one of the many things that the sexual revolution, and in particular the acceptance of contraception, have done is redefine marriage. I mean, marriage isn't what it used to be, largely because it has been disassociated from children. And so it's one more brick pulled out from underneath the culture. You're right. You take away, so you break down marriage, that breaks down culture, and you're left with lonely people looking at porn, unfortunately.
And a lot of technology. I mean, there is a way in which every technological, Caleb, thank you for that call. There's every technological advance. It does take time to integrate it into society, and we're at a time where, like, even the fact that you said, you know, what pornography on the internet. Well, you combine all these technological advances, it really is, it does seem that humanity is now like trying to find some way to integrate this into really human living.
Yeah, and this is another one of those situations where we're going to look back, I think, in 100 years or 200 years or whatever, should the Lord tarry, and think, oh man, we just grabbed on to all of that technology,
yeah.
And we had no idea what it was doing to us,
yep.
And the big danger it was. So.
Whole bunch more calls we want to get to, so we better take a quick break, and then we'll be right back here on Catholic Answers Live.
This is Archbishop Paul Coakley, the Archdiocese of Oklahoma City, and you're listening to Catholic Answers Live.
Howdy, folks. This is Jimmy Akin, and I have exciting news. Starting this spring, Catholic Answers will begin airing its first ever television program. It'll be appearing on EWTN, and you'll also be able to watch it, no matter where you are, from Catholic.com using your smart TV, tablet, or other device. Catholic Answers' mission is to use every means we can to reach people with the message of Christ and His Church. But until now, television has been beyond our reach. That's about to change, and that's why we need your help right now. Producing a quality professional television show like this is not cheap, and it can only happen with the generous support of donors like you. To make your donation, visit Catholic.com and click the Catholic Answers television banner, or call us toll-free at 888-291-8000. That's the Catholic Answers television banner at Catholic.com, or call toll-free 888-291-8000.
Did you know you can book any of our great speakers to speak at your parish or special event? Contact one of our seminar coordinators through the Speakers Bureau section on Catholic.com today to find out more information.
We have a big problem. Our culture is dying, and souls are in danger of being lost. The answer is conversion to Jesus Christ in His church. St. Paul Street Evangelization is a Catholic organization, and we have hundreds of teens spreading the good news throughout the country. But we need your help. The harvest is great, but the laborers are few. Find out more and get involved today at streetevangelization.com. That's streetevangelization.com.
We hear it every year, the perennial question. What are you giving up for Lent? And there's nothing wrong with doing without certain things you may have an affinity for. But this year, why not turn the question around and ask, what are you taking on for Lent? Have you considered helping a friend or family member as they journey into the Catholic Church? It's called Friendship Evangelization. And so you don't have to go it alone, author Devin Rose has written Navigating the Tiber, How to Help Your Friends and Family Journey Toward the Catholic Faith. Not only does he equip you with the knowledge from Scripture, the early church, and Christian history, he shows you how to deal with the common aspects of a convert's journey. Make this Lent one to remember. Order your copy of Navigating the Tiber today by calling 1-888-291-8000, visiting Catholic.com, or asking for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
Call now with your question, 888-318-7884. This is Catholic Answers Live.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. Don Johnson's making a movie about the sexual revolution and the costs and the troubles that have followed upon the sexual revolution. So we thought, well, let's do a show on the sexual revolution. And that's what we're doing right now. And we go now to Jeremy in Dallas, Texas, listening on Guadalupe Radio. Jeremy, you're on with Don Johnson.
Oh, thanks, guys. Hey, first of all, I want to say I just recently discovered this radio station, and I absolutely love it. I was, before I get to my question, just to frame the question properly, I was born and raised Protestant, but I have major issues with Protestantism. So from my teenage years on, I don't affiliate with any Protestant affiliation at all. And I'm also not Catholic, but I really enjoy what y'all are saying. I am very passionate about this subject matter today, and I just wanted to give a perspective from someone outside of the Catholic Church. And as I was growing up as a teenager, I noticed so many people being so promiscuous, and it was branded as this is what you have to do to be free. This is how you have to get to know somebody, know if you want to be with them in marriage. And what I noticed was something that I did not want. My family was a broken family. My father left us when I was three. And what I wanted to be when I grew up was a husband and a father. And I saw unhappiness in my friends and my peers as a teenager. So I made a personal decision that was not religious based, but I made a decision that I was going to hold off on sexuality until I was married. And I looked at it from a viewpoint of, wow, I'm going to be true to that wife I have not yet met. And my question for you is, if in your experiences you have noticed that those who seem to live promiscuously as a sense of freedom tend to be more selfish in sexuality, and part two, tend to have more selfishness in their marriages when those do occur, and if it is actually more jeopardizing to their marriages instead of the opposite.
Wow, Jeremy, so much there. Thanks for that call. And I want to quickly address, I'd like to hear more about how you made that connection, how you related that whole notion of, hey, your promiscuous lifestyle is leading to this breakup of family. But let me do address your question real quick. I like how you mentioned selfishness. Like, you're the one that said selfish. And I think that actually gets to the key of the problem with promiscuity, that any sexual encounter outside of a covenant relationship in a marriage where you are both giving of yourselves completely and totally to that other person, and by giving of yourselves, that means everything, your future, all of your all your hopes, dreams, everything, including all of your body to that person, any encounter that does not do that is withholding something. And when you withhold something from the other person, what you are then doing is treating them as an object. That's the nature of sexual promiscuity. It is, instead of loving, and by loving, I mean giving of yourself for the good of another, instead of loving, you are using. It's the exact opposite. And this was, of course, John Paul the Great's big, that was his theology of the body in a nutshell, that love by its nature cannot use, and the meaning of life is to love, and all sexual immorality is, at some level, using that other person for your own gain. And I think if you just think of anything that the Catholic Church would say is sexually immoral, from adultery to any sort of promiscuity to same-sex relationships, all that stuff, at some level, there is a using. There is an, I'm in this to get something from you for my good. It's the opposite of love. And the opposite of love is selfishness. It's using. And so, yes, when you do that, when you live contrary to reality, when you live selfish lives and you don't love, which is the meaning of life, it will affect every aspect of your life. Like, your relationships, you know, ultimately, the sexual revolution is the death of love. That's the problem. Love dies when you have sexual immorality. The sexual revolution unleashed a culture to very easily be sexually immoral. And as such, relationships were killed, families broke down, people became more and more selfish, people looked at others as more and more just objects for my pleasure. I mean, it's just this vicious, vicious cycle. And I think you have accurately, Jeremy, accurately assessed the situation and made the right call by waiting for marriage. So kudos to you, man.
Thank you.
Well, Jeremy, I hope you'll call again. I'm glad to hear you're listening to Guadalupe Radio, just one of the great institutions in American society right now. We're just fantastic. And does any part of you have an attraction to the Catholic Church?
What I have an attraction to is when people speak truth. With Protestantism, I found a lot of superficiality, if that's an appropriate word. I found a lot of lip service. As I read the Bible, started to become interested in religion in general for myself. As I read the Bible in my 20s, I found too many contradictions in the Bible with what I was observing with my Protestant experiences with my friends. Too much of taking one proof text as their validation for living a sinful lifestyle, as an extreme example. So I am dedicated to observing truth. And what I like about listening to y'all's program is it is thought out. There are rational answers to questions. And that's where my attraction is at the moment.
Well, thank you very much, Jeremy. I hope you will call again. It's a real pleasure to talk with you. And I, as I said, I'm just thrilled that you're spending time listening to Guadalupe Radio, because there's probably not a better source for radio anywhere. We go now to Mika in you're going to have to help me, Mika. Chadron, Nebraska?
The panhandle. That's good enough. Okay,
the panhandle of Nebraska. All right, Mika, yeah. You are on with Don Johnson.
Okay, this is the first time I'm calling. It's just synchronicity that I did tune in today, because I've been dealing with something and I can't find an answer.
Okay.
I know about adultery. I know about fornication. I know the Bible says it's better to be single and serve the Lord. But if you burn in lust, then marry. But I don't know any priest or pastor that says that if they did marry, they were burning in lust. Okay. But they all seem to be married except the Catholic priest. Okay. Now, if a doctor says that a sexual climax is essential for good health and nerves, my question is, what does God say and how does he address masturbation?
Oh, thank you very much, Mika. Don Johnson.
You're going to take this one, Si?
I could. I could do it. This is one of those things where I have a limited range of things I could do apologetics on, and I could do this one.
I don't want to address – the one part I'm not sure about addressing is the doctor aspect. I'm not a doctor. I don't play one on TV, and I'm not sure what the context of that part of the question would be. Masturbation is addressed. I just read it. I'm not one of these local guys who could give you chapter and verse in the catechism, but the masturbation is addressed in the catechism. And it's another one of these things where it is selfish. It's not self-giving. It's self-serving. And so by definition, then, it's not loving. And so as a sexual act, it is condemned in the catechism. But again, it is very pastoral. And I don't, you know, masturbation obviously is widespread in the culture, especially in the sex-obsessed culture that we live in. And so, you know, you need to be very pastoral. I don't want to just give you a cut and dried, like, well, of course, it's evil. I mean, what I'm saying?
Well, the interesting part to me in the catechism is the part where, especially for young people, but maybe not only for young people, but for people who have formed a strong habit, or for young people who are overwhelmed by, I mean, so many changes as a teenager or whatnot,
right.
Then the sinfulness of masturbation is, as Don said, in the selfishness of it and the fact that it does not lead to life. It doesn't. But that sinfulness, the catechism says, is mitigated by a persistent habit that maybe someone is working on overcoming, or the youth of a person who's not yet able to regulate themselves well, or to fully embrace a chaste life. So I think the church is very patient. I think that's really what I get.
Yeah, right.
A sense of patience. You continue to avail oneself of the sacrament of confession and not to feel horrible, but to make progress, but the Lord does make chastity possible. The Lord does make it possible for us to live chaste and free lives, and not to be, as Saint Paul would say, you know, slaves. Don't go back to being slaves. You've been set free, and there's always good hope of that. Mika, does that address your concern?
No. It also says in the Bible that a man should not drop his seed to the ground, and yet I know men that are not loving women, they're not serving, and I picture them all that way. I had a friend, not a friend, I met somebody who lives in D.C., and he became a...
I hate that we had to mention a person's name in there, because we don't... I mean, I know some names are very, very public, Mika, but yes, that is part of why the church teaches what it teaches, and maybe particularly to men, because male sexuality can be of the kind where, okay, so now I'm being obnoxious to women. I'm texting them pictures that I shouldn't be, or I don't want to say I'm not actually doing these things, but and so there is something that's very maturing in the Catholic teaching on sexuality, the teaching that Christ calls us to chastity. And not only that, he gives us the grace. If we avail ourselves, he gives us the grace to live chaste lives.
And I don't think we can overemphasize the whole freedom aspect of it. Like, not only is it possible, but when it is achieved, it is so freeing. You're not a slave anymore to this thing. So it's not – we should never look on it, the Catholic teaching, as, oh, well, that's just impossible. I mean, that's not realistic, and that would be too hard anyway. So, of course, we can't do that. No, it's freeing. It's uplifting.
Right. It is indeed liberating. Are you going to have some sense of that in your movie? It's not promiscuity that liberates. It's not pornography that liberates. It's living fully as a human being the way Christ called us to.
Yeah, absolutely.
Don Johnson, thank you very much for being with
us.
Could you say the website one more time?
ReverseTheRevolution.com.
ReverseTheRevolution.com. The movie to come out sometime in the future, we don't know exactly when, is called Unprotected. And it's a challenge to the sexual revolution. Thanks so much for being with us. We will be back after this. And we'll talk a little bit about prayer. Are you struggling in prayer? Do you have a lack of confidence in prayer? Next hour is completely devoted to developing your confidence in your prayer life. I'm Si Kellett. This is Catholic Answers. We'll be right back.